Time to talk a little NHL analytics. Scott Cullen from TSN.ca joins us. Scotty, welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you guys tonight?
Excellent. Well, because he's such a topical player right now, Evander Kane's goal production hasn't been the same. What do his analytics tell you?
Well, the analytics haven't changed all that dramatically for Kane, but generally they're pretty good. What he does, he generates a ton of shots. You know, like, you know, there's been some talk about, oh, Evander Kane's a third line forward. Well, he's definitely not a third line forward. What he does is he finishes like a third line forward. His shooting percentage is pretty low, but he generates shots like he's a superstar forward. Like, you know, over four a game is the kind of stuff that you get from Rick Nash and Alex Ovechkin and Max Pacioretty, guys who are among the top goal scorers. And that's sort of the difference, I guess, with Kane is that he doesn't finish at quite the same rate that those guys do. So, you know, that's where you get some disappointment. But, I mean, some of that is also, you know, he's a younger guy. He doesn't get the same power play time. You know, there are other factors that go into it. But by and large, you know, Kane is a pretty positive guy to have on the ice. You know, the puck is going away from the Winnipeg net more often than it's going towards it when he's on. And you know, some of the you know, lack of point production, you might be able to pin on where he's been playing in the lineup. You know, he doesn't get, as I said, he doesn't get kind of first unit power play time, and you know, you're kind of stuck there with the way things go in Winnipeg. It's, you know, Wheeler, Little, and Ladd is a terrific first line, but you're kind of, you know, picking up the pieces after that. And because the kind of the best second line that the Jets have been able to roll out for much of this year has been with Matthew Perreault playing left wing, that drops Kane down to third line on that team at times. And even though, you know, they find ways to get him more ice time than your typical third liner. But, you know, by and large, I think the analytics say that Evander Kane's a pretty desirable player to have on your roster.
Scott, Jason and I were talking about the surprise for me in the Western Conference right now, at least the main one, is Nashville. The talk going in was, what'll they do without Barry Trotz, the defense first team, the small budget team, all these years. I thought they might drop off. Exact opposite, Pekka Rinne makes a big difference, obviously. Is there anything aside from the obvious numbers that is driving this team? I mean, they're a plus 35 in goal differential. They got a great goaltender. But is there something we're missing here? Because I still don't get it with them.
Well, I think, you know, having the healthy Pekka Rinne is what makes them a top team. You know, they when they didn't have Rinne last year and, you know, you're kind of stuck spending most of your year with backup goaltending, you know, the results weren't exactly what you would expect from a team that kind of, I think, had hopes of being a contender with a healthy Rinne. And so, you know, now that Rinne's come back and is playing at such a high level, that kind of gives them the backbone that they need defensively. But really, there's a whole kind of different approach that they go on with Peter Laviolette behind the bench. And you know, they basically remodeled their first line. You know, James Neal has shifted lines lately, but, you know, they traded to get him out of Pittsburgh. They, you know, grabbed Mike Ribeiro after he was bought out in Arizona, and they get Philip Forsberg up from the minors. And so all of a sudden you have three top-line forwards, you know, give or take what you think of the caliber of those players, but they were basically playing for the top line for a good chunk of the season so far for Nashville, and very productive in doing so. And that's, you know, that kind of carried them early. But what's really kind of kept them going, I guess, as the season has gone on, is that once Mike Fisher came back from injury, Fisher has been a really productive player as a secondary player for them. And Colin Wilson, who, you know, kind of for three plus years has just been a guy in Nashville, has become a real excellent two-way player for them. And you know, even though Wilson started the year slowly, I think he had maybe 4 points in 15 games or something, he's been like better than a point per game player for the past couple months. And, you know, getting that kind of supporting cast contribution is really, you know, it allows the Predators to kind of keep coming at you. They're not a team who tries to, you know, eke out a 2-1 win. If you want to, you know, trade chances and you know, go to a higher scoring game, they've got a couple lines that'll be able to do that with you. And then, you know, they have one of the highest scoring defenses in the league because, you know, you got Shea Weber with a cannon, and Roman Josi is a really good two-way guy, and Ryan Ellis is a great puck mover when he's been hurt lately. But, you know, this is the kind of the depth of the Predators is that they've been playing Ryan Ellis in their top four. Well, he gets hurt. Well, they turn to Seth Jones to move into their top four. Like, that's a real luxury to be able to have Seth Jones playing on your third pair.
Well, definitely a luxury and likely smart because he's still a very, very young player. Scott Collin joins us. And Scott, I know you've studied analytics a lot, and you know we see that most players, their numbers, just like their analytics, improve in a lot of cases as they get more mature. We morph into to more people talking about it, it seems like, I know Dallas Eakins, who's one of the huge advocates as a coach, he believes there's really no such thing as an individual Corsi. He feels it's more of a team number. There's some people that still trot out the Corsi. Well, what's your thought process on individual Corsi? Is it useful or is it more of a team analytic stat?
Well, there is obviously a team component to it because, I mean, just in the same way, if you're looking at plus minus, you would say that's a team stat. Well, Corsi is just counting shot attempts in a plus minus way. And so there is going to be a team component to that. The value to using, for an individual player's Corsi is that it's going to incorporate some things that you just aren't going to track otherwise. And this is, if you start doing micro tracking and you track the zone entries and zone exits and you come up with all these other micro stats, that kind of factors into what you can see in terms of, shot differential, which is Corsi. And when you're looking at a player, you might look at a guy and say, like, one of the guys last year who had a pretty decent Corsi for the Kings was Matt Green. And no one, people in Edmonton know what Matt Green is, a bruising defenseman, but, nothing special for the most part, right? But Matt Green, at least last season, was excellent at defending the LA Kings blue line, not allowing zone entries into the thing. And that sort of gets reflected in his individual Corsi. It's the kind of thing that you're never going to see in terms of goals and assists and so on. But if you get somebody who ends up tracking all these zone entries and zone exits and, that kind of detail, then it's something that might be reflected in terms of an individual's Corsi number. But, basically what you're going to look at, and when you get an individual Corsi number, if you see something that's unusual that's what sends you off into finding more detail and using that information, to get further information as opposed to saying, all right, well, we've got this Corsi, that's the answer.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's only one because Matt Green on his zone entries usually will face less caliber players compared to Drew Doughty.
Oh, of course. And look, no one's going to suggest that he's at that caliber of player, but there are plenty of times that you might say, well, Matt Green shouldn't be in the lineup, or Matt, that he's kind of that caliber of player. But when you find a guy like that who is having success, and look, I'm sure he's having some of that success because the Kings, have a team that backchecks well and allows him to stand up at the blue line, and there are all kinds of things that factor into these numbers. But this goes to the point that I was making here, is that when you see something there that in a player's shot differential that is favorable or unfavorable, well, that starts you down a rabbit hole into finding out why that's happening.
Scott, there's more than a few teams who make you scratch your head when you see the results, really good or really bad compared to what you think they should be getting. Two of those teams are out here in the West, the Calgary Flames and the Edmonton Oilers. This station had Rob Volman on at one point, who seems to be a pretty sharp guy. It was November 20th, and essentially he said, I believe the Flames had 24 points then and the Oilers had 12. He essentially said, for the rest of the way, if I look at the numbers, Edmonton will garner more points than the Flames will the rest of the way. Well, that spread's now 24 in favor of the Flames. Oilers were scuttled by lousy shooting percentage and bad goaltending. Flames seem to be overachieving. When you look at these two teams, are the Flames a surprise to you when you look at the underlying numbers still?
Yeah, they are. Look, if you get good goaltending, you can confound the numbers, right? And just as the Oilers could with bad goaltending. When you get goaltending that is kind of at an extreme one way or the other, it really, can throw the shot differential analysis for a loop. I mean, look at Colorado last year was a team that, was near the bottom in terms of shot differential, but they have the most points in the Western Conference because Varlamov had such an outstanding year. And, that's the kind of thing that can really, you're looking at extremes when that stuff happens. And, in the case of Calgary and Edmonton, you just sort of you're getting extreme results from, two teams that are arch rivals in the same province. And, so it makes for a great contrast right there beside each other. But that's basically what you're getting is you're getting, Calgary is getting strong goaltending. Jonas Hiller has done really well for them. When they called up Yanni Ordio, he came in and gave them some great games. And you know, the Oilers just haven't really, you know, haven't been able to get anything of substance out of their goaltending this year, and that kind of ruins any gains you're making in terms of shot differential.
Scott Cullen from TSN.ca joining us to talk analytics. Sidney Crosby, Scott, have you looked at his point totals? A lot of people, and I watched Crosby live last night. He definitely doesn't look as explosive. Are his overall analytics down similar to his offensive production, or is that part the same? He's just not producing as much.
Well, I know he's on quite a slump in terms of goals. I think it's like 6 in 27 games now. And that's, you know, that's obviously something of a concern, but in that same kind of vein, in that same amount of time, his shots on goal are still, you know, kind of similar. It's not as though they've dropped off dramatically in that time. And so, yeah, there's something of a slump there, and yeah, there's, you know, reason to be concerned about it, because look, he finished last year on quite a down stretch too. And you know, there was talk about a wrist injury that, okay, well, maybe that was part of the reason for it. But, you know, if he's still, you know, running into goal scoring problems this year at this stage, then, you know, maybe there's something beyond that. But when you look at the decline in his shots on goal or whatever, it's not enough to sort of justify a massive concern. You kind of say, okay, well, this is a slump and it should get better, but, you know, you can't just, you know, sit back and say, okay, well, everything's fine too. It's, I guess, you know, anytime a player goes through, you know, a slump, it's, you know, you have to kind of see what's working and what isn't. And in the case of Crosby, I think you're seeing that the shots are there, and, you know, as they kind of mix and match wingers, you know, there's probably some getting used to the guys, you know, for a long time, for the past couple of years at least, he's been able to go with Kunitz and Dupuis quite a bit on his wing, at least when he's been healthy. And now this year, you know, Dupuis's out, and they've been moving Kunitz around a bit, and so he doesn't always have the same guys. And I wouldn't be surprised if some of it right now is just sort of getting used to wingers. And you know, I would expect that his production will pick up, but at the same time, I can't say for sure that, you know, he's going to lead the league in scoring or anything the way we might have projected at the start of the year.
Scott, it's interesting. You know, the underlying numbers, analytics, whatever you want to call them, clearly they're in their infancy stages compared to the part they'll play moving forward. Teams have jumped on this, and any team that doesn't is going to be behind the curve. But there's still a long way to go, and it's going to evolve. We mentioned Evander Kane earlier. If you just go by eye, okay, you look at his boxcars, but you go, man, he's a young kid, but geez, there's problems there. If it comes out in public that his teammates think he's a pain in the butt, then you might look at his underlying numbers and go, hey, there's a player here. We might be able to steal him, and if he can grow up, we really have something. This marriage between saw him good and the underlying numbers has still got a long way to go till we weighed it the right way, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, particularly when it comes to, you know, how you want to value, you know, off ice.
Yeah.
Things, right? I mean, look, nobody wants to work with a jerk, you know, and that's in all facts of life, you know. I don't want to be working next to somebody who you know, annoys me and makes my life more difficult. And you know, if that's the way guys on the Jets feel about Evander Kane, well then, you know, there's some value to that, and it's just going to be a matter of, you know, the Jets as a team, how do they decide on that value? You know, is it worth putting up with that for the player that Evander Kane is and could be, you know, because he's still a young guy who should be getting better? Or do you decide to cut bait? And with that, you know, there becomes risk. You know, ask the Boston Bruins. You know, you trade Tyler Seguin away, and mm-hmm. you know, and you're going to be watching for years as Tyler Seguin piles up points in Dallas. And you know, and you kind of have to live with that decision if you make it. And look, as much as it was a hard decision for the Bruins to make, I could understand why it was happening, because you know, that's a team that was a cup contender, and you know, you've got Zdeno Chara in his mid-30s. You know, You want guys who are committed to the cause, and if they decided that Seguin wasn't, you know, taking it as seriously as they would have liked, then, you know, I can understand it. But, you know, that becomes the real challenge in terms of evaluating both the on-ice and off-ice and kind of finding a marriage to it. And I don't think there is a real science that you're going to be able to say, okay, well, you know, these off-ice incidents equal this many points on the ice. That becomes a real kind of soft skill in trying to figure out that value in terms of how you build your team.
Scott, appreciate the time. We'll talk analytics with you again soon.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.